gifts without having been capable of using them. But if you have a sword in each hand, it is difficult to handle each of the two swords as you wish. That is why you have to learn to wield the large sword with just one hand. It is normal to wield a large weapon like the lance or the naginata with two hands, but the large sword and the small one are weapons to be utilized with just one hand. Holding a large sword with two hands is a disadvantage when fighting on horseback, when fighting on the run, when fighting in marshy terrain, in a deep rice paddy, on stony ground, on a steep road, or when you are in the midst of a melee. When you are holding a bow, a lance, or any other weapon in your left hand, you must hold the sword with the right hand. That is why holding a sword with two hands is not appropriate in the true way. If you do not succeed in killing your enemy with just one hand, it is enough to use two hands at that point. It is not a very complicated matter. It is in order to learn to handle the large sword easily with one hand that we learn to wield the two swords. At the beginning, everyone has difficulty handling the large sword with just one hand because of its weight. It is the same thing in any form of new beginning. For a beginner, it is hard to draw a bow, and handling a naginata is also hard. Whatever the weapon, the important thing is to get used to it. In this way, you may succeed in drawing a strong bow, and by exercising every day, you will achieve the ability to wield the sword easily by acquiring the strength that is fitting for the way. The way of the sword is not a mere matter of the swiftness of the strike. I will explain this precisely in the second scroll, the Scroll of Water. The large sword is used in an open space and the small sword in a confined space. That is the starting point of the way. In my school, one must win with a long weapon as well as a short one. That is why I do not fix the length of the sword. To be ready to win with all the weapons, that is the essence of my school. The advantage of using two swords instead of one becomes manifest when one is fighting alone against many adversaries and when one is fighting in a closed-in place. It is not necessary to write more about this now. It is necessary to know 10,000 things by knowing one well. If you are to practice the way of strategy, nothing must escape your eyes. Reflect well on this. Knowing the meaning of the two ideograms, hyo-ho. Customarily, in this way, someone who knows how to handle a sword is called a man of strategy. In the way of the martial arts, someone who knows how to shoot a bow is called an archer. Someone who knows how to shoot a gun is called a gunner. Someone who is skillful with the lance is called an expert with the lance. And someone who handles the naginata well is called an expert with the naginata. Thus, someone who excels in the technique of the sword should be called an expert with the long sword, or an expert with the short sword. The bow, the gun, the lance, and the naginata are all weapons of the warrior. Each one of them is part of the way of strategy. Nevertheless, strategy is usually used to designate the art of the sword. There is a reason for this. It is through the virtue of the sword that one rules a country and that one behaves in a fitting manner oneself. The sword is at the origin of strategy. By mastering the virtue of the sword, one person can defeat 10. If one can defeat 10, 100 can defeat 1,000, and 1,000 will defeat 10,000. It is in this sense that in my school the principles are the same for one as for 10,000, and what I mean by strategy includes the practices of all warriors. We may speak of the way of the Confucians, of the Buddhists, of tea masters, of masters of etiquette, or of dancers, but these ways are distinct from the way of the warrior. Nonetheless, Anyone who understands the way in great depth will find the same principle in all things. It is important for each person to persevere in his own way. Knowing the advantage of each weapon in strategy. If you know well the advantages of the different weapons, you can use any weapon appropriately in accordance with the situation of the moment. The small sword is advantageous in a confined place and when you get close to your opponent. The large sword is suited to nearly all situations and presents advantages in all of them. On the battlefield, the usefulness of the naginata is slightly less than that of the lance, for if you compare the two, the lance allows one to take the initiative better. If there are two practitioners of the same level and one has a lance and the other a naginata, the one with the lance will have a slight advantage. The effectiveness of the lance and the naginata depends on the situation of combat. They will not be very effective in a confined space, nor when you are surrounded by enemies in a house. They are weapons especially for the battlefield, indispensable in situations of war. You can learn and develop the subtleties of technique indoors, but they will not be appropriate if you forget the true way. The bow is appropriate when you are moving troops forward or back in the strategy of battles. It makes possible rapid fire in parallel with the use of lances and other arms. It is therefore particularly useful on battlefields in open terrain. But its effectiveness is insufficient for attacking fortresses or for combating enemies who are farther than 36 meters away. At the present time, there are many flowers and little fruit in archery. This goes without saying, and goes for the other arts as well. If an art is nothing but that, it cannot be useful in a really important situation. The interest is great. From within a fortress, there is no weapon more effective than a gun. On the field of battle, also, the interest of the gun is great before an encounter. Once, however, the encounter has begun, its effectiveness diminishes. One of the advantages of the bow is that the trajectory of the arrow is visible, and the deficiency of the gun is that the ball cannot be seen. It is appropriate to examine well this aspect of things. As far as the horse is concerned, it must be strong, resilient, and without bad habits. Generally, as for all the weapons of war, you should choose horses that are large and good for marching. The swords, both the short and the long, should be large and sharp. The lance and naginata, large and well honed. You must have bows and guns that are powerful and are not easily ruined. You should not have a predilection for certain weapons. Putting too much emphasis on one weapon results in not having enough of the others. Weapons should be adapted to your personal qualities and be ones you can handle. It is useless to imitate others. For a general, as for a soldier, it is negative to have marked preferences. You should examine this point well. Cadences in strategy. Cadence is inherent in all things, especially as far as strategy is concerned. It is not possible to master cadence without thorough training. In this world, we can see that different cadences exist. The cadences of the way of the dance and of musicians with their stringed or wind instruments are all concordant and without distortion. Going through the various ways of the martial arts, there are different cadences depending on whether you are shooting a bow, firing a gun, or riding a horse. You must not go against cadence in any of the arts, nor in any handcraft. Cadence also exists for that which does not have a visible form. Regarding the situation of a warrior in the service of a lord, according to the cadences he follows, he will rise or fall in the hierarchy, for there are cadences that are concordant and others that are discordant. In the way of business, there are cadences for making a fortune and cadences for losing it. In each way, there exists different cadences. You must discern well the cadences in conformity with which things prosper and those in conformity with which things decline. In strategy, different cadences exist. First, it is necessary to know the concordant cadences and then to learn the discordant ones. Among the large or small and slow or fast cadences, it is indispensable for strategy to discern striking cadences, interval cadences, and opposing cadences. Your strategy cannot be sure if you do not succeed in mastering the opposing cadence. At the time of strategic combat, you must know the cadences of each enemy and utilize cadences that they will not think of. You will win by unleashing the cadences of emptiness that are born from those of wisdom. In each scroll, I will write about cadence, examining these writings and train well. If you practice diligently from morning till night the way of strategy I teach, your mind will spontaneously broaden. I am transmitting to the world my strategy in its collective and individual dimensions. I am expounding it for the first time in writing in these 5 scrolls of earth, water, fire, wind, and heaven. Those who would like to learn my strategy should apply the following rules in order to practice the way. 1. Think of that which is not evil. 2. Train in the way. 3. Take an interest in all the arts. 4. Know the way of all professions. 5. Know how to appreciate the advantages and disadvantages of each thing. 6. Learn to judge the quality of each thing. 7. Perceive and understand that which is not visible from the outside. 8. Be attentive even to minimal things. 9. Do not perform useless acts. You must train in the way of strategy, keeping these general principles in mind. Particularly in this way, if you do not know how to see the right things in broad perspective, you will not be able to become an accomplished practitioner of strategy. If you master this method, you will not lose even alone against 20 or 30 opponents. First of all, because you maintain your vital energy constantly in your strategy, and you practice the direct way, you will win through your techniques and also through your way of seeing. Since you have free mastery of your body as a result of your training, you will win through your body. Since your mind is accustomed to this way, you will also win through your mind. Once you reach this stage, how can you be defeated? Regarding grand strategy, you must be victorious through the quality of the people you employ, victorious through the way in which you utilize a great number of people, victorious by behaving correctly yourself in accordance with the way, victorious by ruling your country, victorious in order to feed the people, victorious by applying the law of the world in the best way. Thus, it is necessary to know how not to lose to anyone in any of the ways and to firmly establish your position and your honor. That is the way of strategy. The 12th of the 5th month of year 2 of Shōhō, 1645. Shinmen Musashi, for the Honorable Lord Terao Magonojo. The 5th of the 2nd month of year 7 of Kanbun, 1667. Terao Yumeo Katsunobu. For the Honorable Lord Yamamoto Gensuke. The Scroll of Water. The mind of strategy of my school of two swords takes water as its fundamental model. Therefore, I titled this next text, The Scroll of Water, because the idea here is to practice a method of pragmatic effectiveness. For this reason, I elucidate the sword techniques of my school in this part of my writing. It is difficult in writing to explain this way in detail as I would like to do. Even where words are inadequate, you should understand the principle intuitively. It is necessary for you to pause and reflect on each of the words and ideograms I have written in this text. If you listen superficially, you run a great risk of deviating from the way. Regarding the principle of strategy, even though I may describe the situation as though talking about individual combat, it is essential to understand this with broad vision, as the principle of a battle among tens of thousands of people. You are in danger of falling into a bad way if you wander and choose the wrong path, for the slightest error in judgment can have grave consequences, especially in this way. If you content yourself with listening what I write here, it will be impossible for you to reach a high level in the way of strategy. Listen to this text thinking that it is written for you. Do not think that you are just listening or learning written things. Instead of imitating what I write, make this text yours, like a principle that you have brought forth from your own thought. It is necessary to ponder well by putting yourself into the situation. State of mind in strategy. In the way of strategy, one's state of mind need not be distant from the ordinary one. In daily life, as well as in strategy, it is necessary to have an ample and broad mind, to carefully keep it very straight, not too tight, and not at all loose. In order not to have your mind too much off to one side, it is necessary to place it in the center and move it calmly, so that it does not cease to move even in moments of change. All that has to be examined well. Even at a calm time, the mind is not calm. Even at a moment of great speed, the mind is not at all fast. The mind must not be carried along by the body, nor the body by the mind. The mind must be wary when the body remains unguarded. The mind must not be insufficient or even a little bit too much. When the surface of the mind is weak, its depth must be strong so that the opponent cannot perceive one's state of mind. Those who are small, either in size or in number, must know well those who are large in size or number, and those who are large must know those who are small. The large, as well as the small, must keep their minds straight and not overestimate themselves. It is necessary to keep the mind pure and broad, and wisdom will find its place within this breadth. The important thing is to polish wisdom and the mind in great detail. If you sharpen wisdom, you will understand what is just and unjust in society, and also the good and the evil of this world. Then you will come to know all kinds of arts, and you will tread different ways. In this manner, no one in this world will succeed in deceiving you. It is after this stage that you will arrive at the wisdom of strategy. The wisdom of strategy is entirely distinct. Even right in the middle of a battle, where everything is in rapid movement, it is necessary to attain the most profound principle of strategy, which assures you an immovable mind. You must examine this well. Posture in strategy. Regarding posture, it is appropriate to keep the face neither lowered nor raised, nor leaning nor frowning, to keep the eyes unperturbed, the forehead without wrinkles, but with creases between the brows, not to move the eyeballs and not to blink, though keeping the eyelids slightly lowered. In this way, you shape a beautiful, luminous face, keeping the nose straight and the lower jaw slightly protruding. Keep your neck straight, putting some force in the hollow of the nape. Lower your shoulders, with the sensation that the torso from the shoulders down forms a unity. Keep the back straight. Do not stick out your buttocks. Push your force downward from your knees to the tips of your toes. Advance the belly slightly forward so that the pelvis does not lose its stability. Remember the adage, squeeze from one corner, which recommends pressing the scabbard of the small sword, wakizashi, firmly against the belly so that your belt does not loosen up. In sum, it is necessary for you to have as your posture for strategy just the ordinary one, and it is essential that the posture of strategy be the ordinary one for you. This must be examined well. The way of looking in strategy. Your look must be broad and ample. Looking and seeing are two different things. Look powerfully, see gently. It is necessary to look at what is distant as something that is close, and what is close as something that is distant. This is essential for strategy. It is fundamental in strategy to know the sword of the adversary without ever looking at it. You must exercise well in this. Whether it is a matter of strategy on the individual scale or strategy on the large scale, the way of looking is the same. It is essential to look to both sides without moving your eyes. But without preparation, you will not be able to achieve this way of looking at the time of combat. That is why you had better study well what I write here. You must accustom yourself to looking all the time in this way in order to be able to keep this way of looking in any situation. Examine this well. The way of gripping the sword. You should grip the sword holding the thumb and index finger as though they were floating, the middle finger neither tight nor slack, the ring and little fingers very tight. It is bad to have an empty space inside your hand. Hold the sword with the thought of slashing your opponent. When you slash your opponent, the posture of the hand remains the same, and your hands must not tense up. It is with a sense of just slightly moving your thumb and index finger that you beat back your opponent's sword, that you receive it, strike it, or exert pressure on it. In all these cases, you should grip the sword with the thought of slashing. Whether you are training at slashing an object or in the thick of combat, the way of holding the sword remains the same. It is held with the intent of slashing your opponent. In sum, it is not good to let the hand or the sword become fixed or frozen. A fixed hand is a dead hand. A hand that does not become fixed is alive. It is necessary to master this well. The way of moving the feet. To move from one place to another, you slightly raise your toes and push off your foot from the heel, forcefully. According to the situation, you move your feet with a large or a small step, slowly or rapidly, but always in the manner of walking. There are three ways of moving it is necessary to avoid. Jumping, moving with a floating step, stomping heavily. The essential instruction related to moving from place to place is alternate movement of the two feet, positive foot and negative foot, which means you should not move just one foot. When you slash, when you back away, when you parry, you must always move the right and left feet alternately. You must never move only one foot. This should be examined with care. The five guard positions. The five guard positions are the high, middle, low, and those of the two sides, left and right. Five guards can be distinguished, but all of them have as their goal to slash the opponent. There is no guard position other than those five. Whatever guard position you assume, do not think of taking a position. Instead, think of being ready to strike. The choice of a wide or narrow guard depends on your assessment of the situation. The high, middle, or low guard positions are the substantial positions, and the side positions, right and left, are circumstantial ones. Thus, when you are fighting in a place of limited height, where one of the two sides is obstructed, take the side guard position, either right or left. You choose between the right and left in accordance with the situation. Do not forget this instruction. The middle-level guard position is fundamental. In fact, the middle-level position is the original guard. Observe that as you broaden your strategy, you will understand that the middle-level guard position corresponds to the place of the general. Four other positions come after that of the general. You must examine this well. The pathway of the sword. Tachi no michi. Here is what I call knowing the pathway, michi, of the sword. When you handle the sword that you carry all the time, you can handle it freely, even with only two fingers, if you know well the pathway, michi, of the sword. If you are preoccupied about moving the sword fast, the pathway of the sword will be troubled, and that will cause you difficulties. It is enough to move the sword appropriately and calmly. If you attempt to move the sword fast, like a fan or a small knife, you will have difficulties, because you are straying then from the nature, michi, of the sword. You cannot slash a man by thrashing about with your sword as though you are chopping something with a knife. If you strike downward from above, you raise the sword up again, following a pathway that naturally reflects the reaction of the force. Likewise, if you strike horizontally, afterward you bring the sword back along the horizontal, following a suitable pathway. In all cases, you must move the sword broadly and powerfully, amply extending your arms. That is the way, michi, of the sword. If you master the five formulas of technique of my school, you will strike well, because the path, michi, of your sword will be well stabilized. It is necessary to train well. The series of five technical forms. First technical form. Take the middle guard position and point your two swords at your opponent's face. Confront your opponent in this manner. When he launches an attack, deflect his sword to your right and pressing on it, making your attack with the point of your sword. If your opponent attacks you again, strike him from above, downward, turning the point of your sword 1/4 of a circle and leave your sword in the position it has reached. If your opponent attacks once again, cut his arm starting with your sword in this low position. All of this constitutes the first form. It is not possible to understand the five forms just by listening. It is necessary to assimilate them by practicing them with your swords in hand. By making a thorough study of these five forms of the sword, you will understand the way of your own sword, and consequently, you will be able to face all kinds of attacks on the part of your opponents. Know that there are no other forms apart from these five in the school of the two swords. It is necessary to train in this. Second technical form. In the second form, you hold the two swords high and strike with a single blow at the moment your adversary launches his attack. If your blow is deflected, leave your sword in the position it has reached and strike from below upward at the moment your opponent launches another attack. Do the same if this situation repeats. This form includes different ways of directing your mind and various cadences. If you exercise in the techniques of my school, striking according to this form, you will be able to attain precise mastery of the five principles, michi, of the sword, and you will obtain the ability to win, no matter what your way of doing it is. It is necessary to train in this well. Third technical form. In the guard position of the third form, you hold the sword with the point down, as though it were hanging, and you strike the wrist of the adversary from below at the moment he attacks. If the adversary parries and tries to force your sword down by striking it, you turn your sword aside with a passing cadence and cut his upper arm horizontally. The essence of this formula is to win with a single blow starting from the low guard position, the instant your opponent launches his attack. In training in the way, you will encounter this low guard position, which is used when combat is fast, as well as when it is slow. You must exercise in it with your swords in hand. Fourth technical form. In the guard position of the fourth form, you hold the two swords horizontally on your left side and strike the wrist of your opponent with an upward motion at the moment he launches his attack. If he attempts to knock down your upward-moving sword, you follow your intention of striking his wrist in accordance with the way of the sword, and you extend the stroke obliquely up to the height of your own shoulder. This technique conforms to the way of the sword. If your adversary launches another attack, you will defeat him in the same manner in accordance with the way of the sword. You must examine this well. Fifth technical form. The fifth form has to do with a guard position where you hold the swords in the right side guard position horizontally. Relating to the opponent's attack, starting from this position, low, and to the side, you strike diagonally upward and then slash directly downward from above. This form is also important for knowing the way of the sword well. If you train in handling the swords in accordance with this form, you will reach the point of being able to move the heavy swords easily. Giving more details regarding these five forms is not necessary. Above all, it is through continuously applying the techniques of these five forms in their full depth that you will learn the whole of the way of the sword of my school, master the general cadences, and perceive the qualities of the sword of your opponent. At the time of combat against opponents, you will thoroughly and fully apply these sword techniques, and you will win, in whatever way, by employing various cadences in response to the intentions of your opponent. You must learn well how to see with discernment. The teaching of the guard without a guard. Here is what is called the guard without a guard. That is, not having in your mind the idea of adopting a guard position. Nevertheless, the five positions that I have mentioned can become guard positions. You will find yourself placing your sword in a variety of positions depending on the openings furnished by your opponent, and depending on the place and the situation of combat. But no matter what the situation, you must always hold the sword in such a way that you can slash well at your opponent. You hold your sword in the high position, and if in accordance with the moment you lower it a little, your guard will become that of the middle level, and then, if it becomes advantageous to raise it a little, your guard will again become the high one. In the same way, if in responding to the occasion you slightly raise your sword from the low position, that will become the middle level guard. If you hold the sword to the right or the left, and in response to situations you move it inward, you will pass into the middle or low guard. It is in this sense that I recommend the guard without a guard. Whatever the situation is, you hold the sword so that you can slash your opponent. You parry your opponent's sword, which is coming to strike you. You touch, press against, or graze it. All that becomes the occasion for you to strike him. You should keep that clearly in mind. If you think of parrying, if you think of striking, if you think of touching, of pressing, of grazing, you run the risk of your slashing action being inadequate. The essential is to think that anything you are doing has to become the occasion for slashing. You must examine this well. As for group strategy, the placement of troops corresponds to the guard position, and what is necessary is to aim at creating an opportunity to win, Letting a situation fixate is bad. You should work this out well. A single cadence for striking your adversary. Here is what I call the single cadence strike. You are near your opponent, at a distance apart at which you can just reach each other, and you strike very rapidly and directly without moving your body, not letting your will to attack become attached anywhere, seizing the instant when he does not expect it. You strike him with a single blow just at the instant when he is not even thinking of pulling back his sword or moving it out of the guard position or attacking. After having learned this cadence well, you must train in striking rapidly with the interval cadence. The passing cadence in two phases. Here is the passing cadence in two phases. You are just about to attack and your opponent backs away or parries quickly. You feint striking him and then actually strike him at the moment when he relaxes after having started a parrying movement or after having backed up. That is the passing cadence in two phases. It is difficult to master this strike just from listening to this text, but you will understand it immediately when it is taught to you directly. The strike of non-thought. In a situation where both you and your adversary are just about to launch an attack, make your body into a body that is striking. Make your mind into a mind that is striking. Then your hand will strike spontaneously out of emptiness, with speed and power, without taking note of the starting point of the movement. This is the strike of non-thought. It is of prime importance. You will often encounter this kind of strike. You must study it and train in it well. The flowing water strike. Here is what I call the flowing water strike. You are fighting an equal battle with your opponent, and each of you is searching for an opening. In this situation, when your opponent tries in haste to back off, or to disengage his sword, or to push yours back, you expand your body and your mind. You strike broadly and powerfully by moving your body forward first, and then your sword, with a movement that is apparently quite slow, like flowing water that seems to be stagnating. By mastering this technique, you will gain ease and confidence. It is indispensable here to discern the level of your opponent. The chance opening blow. When you strike, your opponent tries to parry by blocking or hitting your sword. You put yourself fully and completely into the action of striking with your sword, and you strike whatever you encounter in your path, whether it is the head, the arms, or the legs of your opponent. Strike in this way, following the single way of the sword. This is the chance opening strike. If you learn this approach well, you will find an application for it at all times. You must minutely discern the details in the course of training bouts. The blow like a spark from a stone. In a situation in which your sword and your opponents are about to cross, strike extremely hard without raising your sword at all. That is the blow like a spark from a stone. To execute this technique, you must strike quickly with the three combined forces of your legs, your body, and your hands. This blow is difficult to execute if you do not exercise in it frequently. With diligent training, you will be able to increase the force of its impact. The crimson leaves strike. You cause your adversary's sword to drop by striking it. Then you immediately bring yourself back to a readiness to strike. That's what I call the crimson leaves strike. When the opponent assumes a guard position facing you, at the moment he is thinking of striking, hitting, or parrying, you strike his sword either with the strike of non-thought or with the strike like a spark from a stone. You strike with force, and if you extend the force of your strike by executing it so that the point of your sword is directed toward the ground, your opponent's sword will definitely drop. By training assiduously, you will arrive at being able to make your opponent's sword fall with ease. You must train well. The body replacing the sword. Instead of the body replacing the sword, I could as well say the sword replacing the body. In general, when you strike, the movements of body and sword are not simultaneously. Taking advantage of the opportunities created by your opponent's strikes, first you put your body in striking position, and your sword will strike without taking your body into account. It can also happen that you strike solely with the movement of the sword without moving your body. But generally, first you put your body in a striking position, and the sword will strike afterward. As you learn the strikes, you must examine this well. The strike and the hit. A strike and a hit are two different things. Striking is striking consciously, deliberately, whatever the manner of the strike. The hit is like a chance encounter, and even if it is strong enough so that your opponent dies from it at once, it is a hit. Whereas a strike is carried out with awareness, this must be examined. A hit might get to the adversary's arm or leg, but this hit must be followed by a potent strike. A hit means having the sensation of touching by chance. As you learn this, the difference becomes obvious. Work this out well. The Autumn Monkey's Body. The Autumn Monkey's Body expresses a combat posture in which you do not use your hands. In getting in close to your opponent, do not think of using your hands. Think of quickly getting your body in close before striking your opponent. If you think of reaching out with your hands, your body will inevitably remain distant. That is why you must think of getting your whole body in close quickly. When you are at a distance at which you exchange sword blows, it is easy to get in close to your opponent. You must examine this well. The body of lacquer and paste. By speaking of lacquer and paste, I teach getting very close to your opponent and staying stuck to him. When you get in very close to your adversary, behave as though you were strongly glued to him with your head, your body, and your feet. In general, fighters have a tendency to put their heads and feet forward, but the body often hangs back. You must try to paste your body against your opponent's without leaving any place where your bodies are not touching. You must examine this well. Comparing heights. Here is what I call comparing heights. When you get in close to your opponent, whatever the circumstances, penetrate forcefully and avoid shrinking. As though you are comparing heights, stretch the limbs, the pelvis, and also the neck. Set your face over against that of your adversary and enlarge yourself, as though to defeat him in a comparison of heights. It is important to move forward forcefully with this attitude. Work this out well. Making your movements stick. In a situation where you and your opponent are both striking with your swords, when your opponent parries your attack, you stick your sword to his and get in close to him while maintaining the stick quality. This stickiness should produce the sensation that your swords are difficult to separate, and you must get in close without having too much of a feeling of forcing. When you stick your sword to your opponent's and maintain this adhesion, it is possible for you to get in close to him with complete confidence. There is a difference between sticking and getting tangled up. Sticking is powerful. Getting tangled up is weak. These should be distinguished. Banging into your opponent. At the moment of coming in close to your opponent, you bang into him. You tilt your face slightly to the side, stick out your left shoulder, and bang into his chest. In banging into him, you fill your entire body with force, and you strike with a cadence of concordance with the breath and with the sensation of rebounding. By mastering this technique, you can strike so violently that your opponent will be knocked back a distance of 2 or 3 ken. Your impact can be such that your opponent dies of it. You should train well. The three parries. Here are what I call the three parries. When you come in close to your opponent, if he strikes at you, you parry his sword with a movement as of stabbing his eye with your large sword, thus deflecting his sword over your right shoulder. Here is what I call the stabbing parry. You parry the sword of your adversary, who is attacking you, as though you were going to stab his right eye, with the sensation that you are going to slit his throat with the continuation of this movement. Finally, at the moment when your opponent attacks, you parry with your short sword as you come in close to him, doing this as though you were going to punch him in the face with your left fist, and without giving any thought to the length of the blade of the sword you are holding. For this third parry, you should think that you are delivering a punch with your left hand. You should train in these well. Piercing the face. Here is what I call piercing the face. In the course of combat, the two combatants are face to face, separated by a certain distance, each holding his sword pointing toward his opponent. At this time, it is essential to think constantly of piercing the face of your opponent with the point of your sword. By applying your mind to piercing the face of your opponent in this way, his face and body will be pushed back. After having repulsed the adversary in this manner, different opportunities to defeat him will present themselves. You must work this out well. During the combat, if you succeed in pushing back the body of your opponent, you will always have won. That is why you must never forget what I call piercing the face. You must acquire this approach in the course of your training and strategy. Piercing the heart. Here is what I call piercing the heart. When the place of combat is tight with regard to height and breadth, and you have difficulty in executing slashing movements, stab your opponent. Elude his strike with the sensation of directly showing him the back of your sword. Then bring the point of your sword back into a straight line and from this position stab him in the chest. You should apply this technique when you are tired or when your sword is not cutting well anymore. You must understand this well. Katsutotsu. Here is what I call katsutotsu. When you attack, driving your opponent back, or when he tries to riposte in response to your attack, you lift your sword from below upward as though to stab him. Then you reverse this movement, lowering your sword in order to strike him. In all cases, you strike with a rapid cadence, katsutotsu. That is, you raise your sword and upward in order to stab, katsu, and then you strike, totsu. In the course of combat, you will very often encounter this cadence. You execute katsutotsu by first raising the point of your sword as though to stab your opponent, and then lowering it immediately in order to strike him. You must train well in this cadence and examine it. The parry with the flat of the sword. Here is what I call the parry with the flat of the sword. In the course of combat, when the exchanges of attacks and defenses between adversaries become stagnant and repetitive in a cadence of totan totan, you parry an attack with the slap of your sword, which you apply to the sword of your opponent side against side, and afterward you strike. Do not slap too hard, and do not think about parrying. The proper way to react to your opponent's attack is to slap his sword and strike him immediately as an extension of the same effort. You must take the initiative through the movement of slapping your opponent's sword and take the initiative through the strike. If you slap his sword with the right cadence, with the sensation of stretching your arm slightly, even if your opponent's strike is very strong, the point of your sword will not be knocked down. You must study this well and examine it. Conduct against many adversaries. What I call conduct against many adversaries applies when you are fighting alone against many adversaries. Draw both your large and small swords and take up a guard position with them held wide apart, as though you were tossing them horizontally to both sides of you. Even if your opponents come at you from four sides, you will fight them by driving them back in a single direction.